to his signatures, and he's breaking his bond, he's breaking his word. As a matter of fact, according to the nusach of that tzettel, is like the Ramchal is makabel upon himself actually b'toyus ha-shvuah. It's not just that he's going to just promising, but with the strength and the strength of his shvuah, the koyach of his shvuah, that he will refrain, and he's going to sort of like lay low. And the rumors had it, or this is the way they made the rumors, that Ramchal really was breaking his word, was breaking the shvuah that he made. And in addition to that, the svarim of the Ramchal, he realized, based upon the Eitzah that was given, the advice of his Rebbe, Rabbi Bassan, Rabbi Shaya Bassan, Ramchal should give over all of his kiz ve'yad. He should give over all of his kiz ve'yad, he should give over to his Rebbe, because it was anticipated that the rabbis of Venice are going to force Ramchal to give all his ksaviyad, all his manuscripts to them. And the Mela, they'll burn it, they'll destroy it, they'll tear it up. And so therefore he gave over all his ksavim, he gave over to his Rebbe, and his Rebbe, as a matter of fact, handed it over to someone in Padua, handed over all the kizviyat to someone in Padua, where the Ramchal lived. And the rumors had it that Ramchal from time to time pays a visit to that person, and he opens the box, which is supposed to be a locked and a sealed box, and he's taking out manuscripts, and again he's doing it with it as he used to be doing it, but he's doing it this type of way, piecemeal. He, from time to time, he pays a visit, and in fact he is allowing himself again to use all those manuscripts that he had promised that he will not be using. What happened is also that Ramchal Sarebi, actually, when he heard those rumors, Rabbi Shai Basson was asking Ramchal, is there any truth to that? So he tells him that no. As a matter of fact, Rabbi Shai Basson, before he asked Ramchal the rumors are true, he himself denied it without even knowing, checking with Ramchal, because he could not believe that Ramchal really somehow would break his commitment. So his Rebbe, on his own, defended Ramchal, saying, no, it can't be true. He's not breaking his commitment. He does not go back. He's not opening the box. The ksovim are there, and that's where they're supposed to be staying. But after he denied it, the Rebbe denied it on his behalf, took the liberty of denying it, he actually asked Ramchal, tell me, is it true? He said, he was defending his Talmud. So the Ramchal said, very clearly said, no. He says, I never opened and I never went there. And Chocham Odov Menovi, he says that you, my Rebbe, you are Chocham, you're greater than a prophet. Chazal say Chocham is greater than a prophet. In a sense, being without me even having telling you, but you believed in me that I would not break my word. And whatever they are saying is truly, it's lies, it is sheker. And but however, the Ramchal wrote in the letter, whatever rumors that they are saying about me, whatever they are plotting against me, he says, Hine libi lo yipoel al divrem klal. He says, I will not despair. I'll not allow this to break me, says Ramchal, because the main thing is that Kodesh Baruch Hu knows the truth, and Kodesh Baruch Hu is with me. He said, Alekim li, Hashem li lo yira mayase li odom. I'm connected to Kodesh Baruch Hu, so therefore I don't have nothing to fear. Man cannot do anything to harm me. And he said, the Lashon in his letter, he wrote, Kanit hilo lakeil shemem mishmaris yishmer shuvasi. I, he says, Baruch Hashem, I am keeping, he says, the promise of my shvua, b'chol taikif, with all of its strength. Now, in any mekel, the sake of the raisa, and I'm not being mekel in any way, in the shayla of the raisa, shvua is a raisa. And therefore you can be sure, he says, that I am fully committed to it. And then he says further, which he sort of like, he knocks the Gedolim of Venice, and he says, but I want to tell you, he writes to his Rebbe, that my smallest Talmidim are greater than their greatest, he says. So this he says on the side, he didn't tell it to them, but this he said to his Rebbe. Anyway, so what we see is that the opposition force did not stop. Matter of fact, just always continued on and on and on. And they could also not bear to see even the success of the yeshiva that Ramchal took ran. So in spite of their efforts to break him, Ramchal the Maisa, even after the commitment with the letter, but Ramchal goes on pretty strong. He has his yeshiva and everything is going further and further. What happened is an incident which again caused to stir up the situation again, which was really a hemshech. It's not really a new situation, but it's a hemshech of the old machloikis against the Ramchal. It's something, an episode that took place in 1734. In 1734, he says, it came out a publication. The publication came out by an Odom Gadol, probably one of the greatest controversies surrounding that person, someone whose cave we visited actually in Venice, the Rude Arya di Modena, otherwise known, you know, in the secular world, he's called Leon di Modena. Rabbi Yehuda Aryeh de Modena. Aryeh de Modena, just matter-of-factly, if anyone ever said Yom Kippur Kotan, you know, you say Erev Shchodesh, some say it, every Erev Shchodesh, some say Erev Shchodesh Elul, there happens to be a piyut over there that begins with the words Yom Zeyeh Mishkal Kol Chatoisai. This is the day that my Averus are being weighed. And if you take a look in the small Oseus now, you'll see that this was composed by Rabbi Yehuda Aryeh de Modena. The Aryeh de Modena, you have to realize, is a person who was a tremendous, tremendous Ilui. They say one of the greatest of the generation. Let me just tell you his dates. He was born 1571. We're talking quite early, way before the Ramchal. 1571. And he was Nifter in 1648. By the way, corresponding in Poland in 1648, there was a Gezeres of Tach V'Tach, where all the pogroms were taking place. So many thousands and thousands of Jews were killed. The Chmelnytsky pogroms. But here we're talking Italy. So, this Rabbi Yehuda Aryeh de Modena, as we mentioned, in the, as a young age already, tremendous talent was already seen by him, and both in learning and also in secular studies. He had, an astonishingly versatile mind. The person was an expert in all areas. He was an expert in music, he was an expert in mathematics, in philosophy, in science. He spoke and he wrote Italian, Latin, poetry. Above all, he was a tremendous baldashin, tremendous orator. When he gave a drosha, not only would it be attended, it would be a standing room only, but it was Jews and non-Jews alike, because the droshas were then, he was given in Italian. As a matter of fact, even galochim, priests, bishops, everything, because he had a particular style, his eloquence, his phrasing, his ideas, it was something that merely to hear him, if somebody was wanted to learn a trait, a way, of in a manner, of how to be able to express oneself and to become a speaker, this was the place to learn it. You got it for free, just coming to listen at his drushes. And therefore it was someone who really captured the hearts of everybody, and he was a master of Torah. Let me explain that, or we wouldn't be talking about him here. He was a master of Torah, and was considered to be one of the most foremost Rabbonim in Italy. His whole life was fraught with difficulties, literally. First of all, Parnosa never was his thing. He was always, whatever he tried, they say, whatever he tried, he never was a matzliach. Barely eking out a living. Man with so much knowledge, so many talents, could not eke out a living. It's like the Eben Ezra, you know, Kiddu is also in Onishim Anim, the great Eben Ezra, you know, one of the greatest Mefarshim al HaTorah. Eben Ezra wrote, actually, one of his poetries, and as he wrote, he says, my mazel, he says, is so bad, is so cursed, that if I would go into the business, he says, of selling tachrichim, nobody would die. He said, this is my mazel. Eben Ezra writes this. He writes it in poetry form, by the way. This is what he wrote. And so this was really the same thing was with him. At various times of life, he was a malamed, a Rosh Yeshiva, a teacher, he was a chazan. He used to edit manuscripts. If anybody wrote something, a sefer, he needed someone to edit it. He was a master of that, so he used to edit manuscripts. He writes by his own accounting. He had 26 different occupations that he tried, literally. And he lists them. He lists them, all the different types of occupations. And yet with all of these things, they say, Asach meluchas v'ainik bruchas, you know, a lot of meluchas, but sinish gigang, it didn't work for him. And also at various periods, he worked for various publishing houses because he had the talent of the language. So in 1594, he was officially, appointed to serve as the Rav and to be the Baldashin in Venice, and that was till the end of his life. His personal family life also, a lot of tzoros. His wife was very sick, often and often. Mommy, she was always sickly. Several of his children died at a young age, and the one surviving son was someone who was sort of like off the derech by, as you call it today. He traveled to Brazil and was never heard from again, and so on and so forth. But when we bring, why we bring this up here now? So Rabbi Yehuda Aryeh, a very, very controversial person, as we're saying, yet his whole lifestyle was different than the traditional lifestyle, and yet he was highly respected, but again, very much controversy surrounding him, because he allowed himself to do things that a conventional rov of his stature would not be doing. As a matter of fact, he was also a dancer. No, how do you like that? Not of chasen as davkin. Okay. But, and he had a weakness. Yes, Rabbi Yisai, he had a terrible weakness. That weakness was gambling. He did not go in as a gambler, thinking, being that he had such difficulty making a living. So what he figured, you know what, maybe I'll try, you know, put in a dollar, maybe I'll come out with $100, you know, maybe my mazel tepsiah over here. What happened was just the opposite. It just dragged him in, one thing led into another, that he actually wrote about it. He wrote about it, about the weaknesses of gambling, and clearly to alert the public. Don't think, he says, that you're going to get out safely from this if you get involved with it. At first, it may appear to be something innocent. He was very honest in a sense, to bring out very strongly how much, by the way, it really dragged him down, and how much he suffered for that. At the same time, to let people know to stay away from such a thing. One of his distinctive facets of his personality was his lifelong opposition to Kabbalah, which was not the going trend in Italy. In Italy, the Rabbonim of Italy were very much connected to the study of Kabbalah and believed in it very strongly. He was a revolutionary in many, many ways. He opposed it. Well, opposed it is one thing, but he didn't really oppose it verbally. But Rav Yehuda Ari Medina, as we say, was perhaps the unique one among all the Rabbonim of his day, that he wrote a sefer called Ari Noyim. Ari Noyim is "The Lion is Roaring." That sefer was an entire sefer. It was Kishmai Kenu, "The Lion Roaring." It was a scathing polemic against Kabbalah and anybody who supported it. A sefer totally, totally against Kabbalah. And interesting thing, he admits, by the way, you know who his Sandik was? The Sandik of Rabbi Yehuda Ari Memordina was the Ramam Epanuch, one of the greatest Balamu Kabbalim, Ben Menachem Azariah, which we had the chutzpah to finally find this cave in Mentova, which was an army base where you couldn't go in, but it was the sign which was there on the wall again. The Ramam Epanuch was a Sandik, and he admitted Ramam Epanuch, he says, was a great man, and he gives admiration to him. But Lamaisa, but the fact that he was a Balamu Kabbalim, that part he didn't, was not gracious. He was against that. And he wrote a whole sefer, against the study of Kabbalah. Now, it's an interesting thing. The sefer Ari Noyim was published not in his lifetime, 2 centuries later. It was published 2 centuries later. Lemaise, but the work and the arguments were known, and therefore many replies were written against it. Well, who do you think comes to defense of Kabbalah? The Ramchal. So Ramchal comes and he writes the sefer. Sefer is called Maimer HaVikuach. Maimer HaVikuach, a Maimer of debate. There the Ramchal clearly goes through it. Sefer Choker Mekubel is called. And the purpose of the sefer was clearly to show and to destroy, in his opinion of Ramchal Kaponim, all the arguments that was made by good argument against Kabbalah, very strongly defending the study of Kabbalah, Reb Shimon ben Yochai, the Zoya, the Arizal, and so on and so forth. Because the Maisa, interesting thing, Reb Udami Medina also wrote against the Zoya. He also wrote against the Arizal. Anything in Kabbalah, he clearly did something that was out for him. And therefore comes Ramchal and he defends it very strongly. Literally like a chayma, like a wall. Like a wall, a sturdy, sturdy wall. And he goes on, he takes on the mantle of Kenoyis, right, to avenge, to take up the honor, he says, Reb Shimon ben Yochai and the Zohar and so on. And before he publishes that sefer, he goes to his Rebbe B'shai B'son to give him a haskoma. He says, I want a haskoma on the sefer. And his Rebbe did not want to give him a haskoma because he says, you know what? If you publish this sefer, you realize, if you thought that you had opposition from the rabbis of Venice, because Rabbi Yehuda Ari Medina was one of the great rabbonim in Venice in the previous generation, and you go now and you start writing a sefer against Rabbi Yehuda Ari, who was one of the great rabbonim of Venice, so now you're starting up with the rabbinate of Venice, one of the great ones from before, from even an earlier generation, this is going to cause you, and going to compound all the trouble that you're in now, you're going to have even more trouble. But Ramchal says, listen, he says, he put pressure on his Rebbe. He says, I'm ready, he said, to take on whatever he says this is going to cause. I feel it's very important, Lashem Shemaim, to defend the study of Kabbalah. I have no choice. I have to publish a sefer. And be with me. Whatever comes, he says, I'll be ready for it. And so on. And his Rebbe did give him a haskoma to write it. He also got a haskoma from his father-in-law, who was also one of the Gedolei Hador, David Pinsky. David Pinsky was a Rav in Mentova. Gave him also rishus, and writing the sefer, and so on. Meshem, the future, we'll talk about again subsequently what happened after this. So for now, let's just write this, that Ramchal wrote another sefer, which again stirred up controversy against the Yehuda Aryeh, the Medina. When we were there in Venice, it was a terrible rain at that particular time. We couldn't spend much time. It's a 20-minute ride by boat from Venice to get to the Beis HaChaim. There's no Beis HaChaim Jewish in Venice proper. So it's outside. It's called Lido. It's an island. And that's where the old ancient Jewish Beis HaChaim goes back hundreds and hundreds of years. And there's the kever. It's one of the kevarim that still remain, mamish identified with the Matzev is still there. Of course, not in perfect condition, but nevertheless, it's still there. And so we had the opportunity to be there. We had somebody who showed us where it is, and so it was a big schus to be there. So we go now through Amchal, Rabbi Yisai, in the Derech Hashem. We go to Daf Lamed Tes in your edition. And it's the paragraph has it's numbered Yud Aleph. The chapter is Yud Aleph, actually. The paragraph is numbered Yud Aleph. Daf Lamed Tes. Starts with the words Ve'omnom. Ramchal here actually is going on to explain the following. Being that we studied in the previous segments, Ramchal pointed out that a person's true reward for his ma'asim tovim, for his good deeds on this world, will not be given in this world, but the true reward will be given only until the world is renewed. As Ramchal pointed out, he says, at the end, he says, of the 6,000 year period, there will be a 7,000, 1,000 year where everything will be destroyed, and then there will be a new world, a renewal, and you'll have tchis ha'asim. It will be in that new world, he says, when the schar will be given. So the Ramchal now has to explain to us what happens to a person when he dies. What happens to a person when he dies? The actual reward for his ma'asim tovim will be in the renewed world. In the renewed world, when the world will be renewed again, Kadosh Baruch Hu will, so to speak, rebuild the world that will come to an end, and there will be renewed. That is the time when a person will be given his true schar. In the meantime, a person leaves this world. So what happens? What happens to a person when he dies? Ramchal says the following. I want you to know, he says, Ve'omnom, being, since, Be'yoshe nigzra ha'misa lo'odom k'moshe zechanu, being that there was a gzeir upon man, the man has to die, right, as we mentioned. So being that there's a gzeir, as we said, that a man has to die, so the nimtza, so it comes out, if a man dies, it means that the partnership between the neshama and the guf has to end. It's obvious, that's the definition of death. So that partnership that you have, right, that partnership, the combination, Shamurkov Hazeh, right, this partnership, which is between the neshama and the guf, Sarach Shiyiparid Lizman Ma, it has to be separated for a certain amount of time, because there'll come a time later where they'll be reunited, when Tchis HaMesim, right, will come. So then again they will reemerge together, reunite. But in the meantime, when a person leaves this world, this Murkav Hazeh, so this combination, he says, so she parad lizman ma, will have to be separated for a certain amount of time, the arikav yoshuv lihischaber, and only afterwards, right, will be, he says, reunited. And again, just very briefly, because Ramchal pointed out in the previous segments that the human body, after the chet of the Marishan, the physical human body absorbs so much, right, impurity to the aver of the Marishan, that it cannot be really fully purified in this state. The state that it's in, the human body cannot be purified, and the neshama, which tries, by the way, the neshama tries to purify the guf. But after the chet of the Marishan, the guf, the human body, absorbs so much impurity, so much evil, as it were, that the neshama is not capable of purifying it. So therefore, that guf, as we know it, will have to cease to exist, will be destroyed, so it can be rebuilt later on in a much more pure state. But the neshama, on the other hand, Ramchal tells us, was not damaged. And therefore, the neshama does not need rehabilitation. Even after the chet, the neshama is not damaged. Is the guf that is damaged? The guf needs rehabilitation. The neshama does not need rehabilitation. Therefore, the neshama and the body have to be separated while the body undergoes its purification. And that is misa, as he goes on to explain. Hinei gam b'zman ha'pirud hazeh. Even during the period of separation, when the neshama and the guf separate, royo she'mokim l'shnei halochem ha'mispadim, is appropriate that each one has a appropriate place. The guf has to have a proper place after misa, and the neshama has to have a proper place. And it has these two chalakim that are now being separated. These two separated components of man have to have appropriate places. No'ois lema shenirtzol lepiridahu, which is befitting and it's acceptable for that separation. Which means to say, the body has to have a place where it can be cleansed. And at the same time, the neshama has to be in a place where it can wait for the time of Tchis HaMesim. So where does the neshama go while it's waiting? Here you have a situation, it's a neshama in waiting. Because the neshama was not damaged. It is the guf that was damaged. And the purpose of this separation, that's why the person has to die, is in order to allow the body to undergo purification. So the neshama therefore is waiting for the time to be able to reunite. So where is the neshama going? The body, we know where it goes. Where does the neshama go? So now, said Ramchal, Vihine Haguf. First, the Machal tells us what happens to the body upon Misa. What happens to the body? Vine Haguf, Sorech Shiyachzer LeYisoidoi. The body has to return to its original state, from where it comes from. Vitiporeit Harkovosoi Vitiposei Tsurosoi. The body, after death, right, returns to original state, and its composition decomposes. Right? Its composition decomposes, the deposit surosoi, and its form becomes lost. And being that the body was formed from offer, right, from dust, so El of Yoshuv. So if the body has to return to it. Now, the nekud is that once the body, right, has been transformed back into earth, so now it can be formed freshly without any previous pollution. Because the body now has gone back to its original state, transformed back into earth. That's exactly because Baruch Hu tells Adam Rishon in Bereishis, "Ki ofer ato ve'lo ofer toshuv." Because Baruch Hu says to Adam Rishon that you are dust, and to dust you'll return. So the Maisa, so it comes out that Adam Rishon's body, since Adam Rishon's body was formed from earth, it has to return to earth. But it's important to note one thing. That even though, as Ramchal tells us here, that the body in earth has to decompose, however, Ramchal writes in Sefer Das Tevunah, it's one of the other famous forms of Ramchal, that this is based from Chazal, it's actually a Medrash, that there's one bone that does not decompose, it's called luz. Something you spoke about by Shalashidas many times. There's a bone, the human body, that's called luz, and that, from that bone, right, the body will be rebuilt and it remains fully intact. That's one bone that even though the body and the flesh and everything where decomposes, but there's a bone that's called luz. And in another sefer, Ramchal wrote a sefer, it's called Kalach Pischei Chochmah. Kalach is Kuflam Ches, 138 gates or openings of Chochmah, wisdom, another sefer. And there Ramchal writes that some element, the lowest element of the neshama still remains. Interesting, even though when a person dies, the neshama leaves the body. Ramchal writes in that sefer, Kelach Pischei Chochmah, that the lowest level of neshama still remains, which keeps, so to speak, alive that loose bone, in a certain sense. So therefore, Tchis HaMesim will emerge, he says, from that particular bone. So that's what Ramchal which mentions in a different sefer. So a component. So the body, as we see, the body has to be transformed back into earth, so to be able to remove itself from the previous impurities. What about the neshama now? Where does the neshama go in the meantime, while it's waiting, while the body undergoes its process? Where does the neshama go until the time comes to be reunited? So Ramchal, Acha neshama hazoichim b'maseo. However, a neshama that was privileged through its deeds, right? A neshama that was privileged in its deeds. In other words, it deserves, the neshama that deserves to attain Dveikas Hashem in Olam Haba, the neshama that deserves, right? Now, remember, according to Ramchal, Olam Haba means, you know, does not mean what we're talking about. We think of Olam Haba Gan Eden. Ramchal, when he uses Olam Haba, means the new world. The new world when the Kodesh Baruch Hu will recreate the world and there will be Tchis HaMesim and Neshama and Guf will come together. That's when the combination, the new combination of body and soul coming together, that's when they will receive their ultimate reward. It's called in the new world. That's called Olam Haba. In the meantime, when the Guf passes away, and the neshama has to go somewhere. It doesn't go to Olam Haba. That's not the lashon. We use it, by the way. We use it. This is a figure of speech. It's just a common way that we refer to Olam Haba. Gan Eden is something else, and Ramchal in Olam Haba something. Olam Haba means the new world, the coming world. The world when body and soul will be connected, that's at the time of Tchis HaMesim. In the meantime, the neshama goes to Gan Eden. Waiting till the body undergoes its process, and to allow the neshama then to come back and to have tchisa meisim. Let's take a look. Acha neshama azoichim b'maseo. The neshama that is worthy through its meisim. Hine ein lo elo litzfois at sheyoyosu beguf ma shesorich lasois. The neshama, as it were, is just waiting. It has to wait until the process is done. The neshama has to do it, and it's only to look forward. There's one thing. The neshama has one thing to look forward to, at sheyase or sheyoyosu beguf ma shesorich lasois, until what needs to be done to the guf is done. Because, as we mentioned, the neshama has nothing more to do. Why? Because all the mitzvah that a person did while he was alive, and that's the only time you're able to do it. So the neshama already has what it's supposed to have. It's, however, it has to wait for the body to be cleansed. So now the neshama is waiting for the body to be cleansed. So as he points out, and that is, he's waiting for the body to have to undergo what the body has to undergo, and that is, the hainu ha-hatocho v'ha-hefsed, he says, borishoino. Firstly, it means that the breakdown, right, and the loss, right, of what the original body was, and the body has to remain in dust whatever time is necessary. Here, a very important point here, Rabbi Sain. Chal is telling us, and he's enlightening us, he's telling us, in addition to the actual breakdown of the body, whatever long it takes, does it take a year, does it take 2 years, whatever it takes, in addition to the breakdown of the body also has to remain in that state. The body has to remain in that state of disintegration for a certain period of time. What does it depend on? How much purification needs. How much purification needs. The Ramchal ever tells us, you see it from the Ramchal, that not everyone, which you're going to find out now, that not everyone needs the same amount of time for the body to remain in a state of disintegration. In other words, just as people die at different points in history, right? Nobody dies at the same time. Right? People die at different points in history. So to Tchis HaMesim will be at different times, depending how much purification a body needs. So Michal tells us, very interesting, when the time of Tchis HaMesim thing, so we're always on the notion, Tchis HaMesim, everybody gets up at the same time. According to Michal, it's not so. It all depends how much purification the body has to undergo. Which means if a particular body had so much impurities during his lifetime, and therefore it has to be in a state of disintegration for a longer time, so the time will be longer. Those people, right, who the body, right, is able easier to purify itself because it did not absorb that much pollution. So then the body is able to reunite with the neshama time so much quicker. That's what he points out over here. That's what he says, called as the man shitzorech, that the body remains in a state of disintegration as long as it needs. Which means, so it depends. Everybody has its own situation. So that's it. Whatever the situation is, that's how long we'll have to remain there. And then subsequently to be reconstructed, the shitoshu of Likonis boy, until that time the neshama will re-enter. That time the neshama will re-enter the body. No. So in the meantime, again, so the neshama has to wait, whatever the process, its body, you know, its shirich. Every neshama has a shirich. So its shirich, its body. But depending on the actions of that body during his lifetime. So the neshama now has to sit and wait until her body, the body that it had while they were alive together, so the neshama has to wait. So where is that neshama in the meantime? Where does it wait? Where does Hashem put the neshama? So says the Ramchal, Ba'omnom tzorech she'yil amokoyim bein kach u'bein kach. But in the meantime, the neshama needs a place. Right? Until the body is undergoing its purification process, the neshama needs a place. Where is the neshama going to be? The neshama, again, remember, is undamaged. And where is the neshama now going to be? So he says, V'ulam l'tzorech zeh, for that purpose, for the neshama to have a place, right, while it's waiting for the guf, Hukan Oilam Hanishomois. Rishbal created what's called the Oilam Hanishomois. The world of the Nishomois was designated. So when we talk about the world of the Nishomois, right? So it means in another sefer, Machal was a sefer called Mama Ikarim. In Mama Ikarim, Machal points out this is called Gan Eden. This is called Gan Eden, which of course was the place where Adam Rishon lived before he sinned. Right, and although after the Avera mankind fell right so low to physically that he's no longer Hashem chased out Adam Rishon by Yigurish, Adam Rishon was chased out. Machal points out that the Maisa, the Mogma of Gan Eden, still is a place for the Neshama. So after the Guf dies, so now the Neshama goes into that place in Gan Eden, and that's where the Neshama stands and it waits until the time comes to be reunited for the Guf. That's what he says. But Ulam again, therefore, Lutzorich Zeh Huchen Oilam Anishomis. Kishbo created a world, an Oilam Anishomis, i.e., Gan Eden. Sheboiti Konasna Anishomis Hazoichois. These Nishomis are privileged to answer the Mokim of Gan Eden, Achat Seisar Maguf, after leaving the body. How long do they stay there? Well, Veteshav Nishon Bimokoi Menucha, and remain there in a state of Menucha, called Man His Galgal Al Haguf. And they have to, the Shomer remains there the entire period that the body has to undergo what it has to undergo. So according to what the body has to undergo, what the body has to undergo, the Neshama remains over there. So very clearly. So again, so what it means is very, very poshut. So again, just for definitions, the way just to have it clearly, so it means the following, he says. We use the term Olam Haba loosely to mean Gan Eden. Ramchal clearly defines and delineates that a person's neshama does not go to Olam Haba after death. Because the strict definition of Olam Haba is the world that will be renewed. The world that will be renewed after this world as we know it is destroyed in the seventh millennium. Right? And therefore it's not yet in existence. So Olam Haba is not yet in existence. We have what's called the Olam HaNeshomos. Or Gan Eden, and therefore the neshama go to the Olam HaNeshomos, and that's it. But loosely, as we always talk about Olam Haba, we say going Shemaim because it goes to Olam Haba, goes to Olam Haba. But strictly speaking, Olam Haba is referring to the new world that will be reconstructed, right, in the future, and then there will be Kriyas HaMeisim because the neshama and the body will come together again. Vehine. In the meantime, so the neshama now is in Gan Eden. Neshama is in Gan Eden, he says, you have to realize, in a kol zman ahu. He said, during that entire period, he said, Tishkoina haneshomis ahem b'malu b'tainuk. The neshomis in Gan Eden, they live in a heightened state, and mamish with tainuk, with tremendous pleasure. The neshama, therefore, in other words, oil man neshomis is not just a storage chamber. Don't make a mistake that the Olam HaNeshomos is a storage. The storage the Neshomah until the goof is ready to come up again. It's not just a storage chamber. But while the Neshomah is in that Olam HaNeshomos waiting for the goof to be processed, the Neshomah at the same time is mamish basking in the glory of having the tiny, the Neshomah has an aliyah. That's what he says. B'maylo. The Neshomah has an aliyah. U'betanuk, in pleasure. But the pleasure that it gets in Olam HaNeshomos is just a portion, a small portion that it will receive, the ultimate schar will be in the renewed world after Tchis HaMeisim. So in the meantime, before Tchis HaMeisim, when the Neshama is there waiting, the Neshama gets, as it were, a glimpse of the future pleasure. And even that glimpse is a pleasure that we can't even imagine to be tremendous, depends on the power of that pleasure. But this is what Ramchal is saying, that the Neshama will receive, he says, Milo Betainig Me'ein. There'll be a glimpse. What it has in the Olam HaNeshomos, we glimpse Mei Mashi in Osem Lahem. We glimpse similar to what will be given to them. Achakach, he says, in Olam Haba, in the future world. Bizman HaGemul HaMiti, at the time of true compensation, that's when the world will be renewed, as he says, Shezuchan Olamala, as we mentioned above. Because Kigam Maloson Olam HaNeshomos. Because realize also, by the way, and how much pleasure will the Neshomah receive, and how much pleasure while it's waiting? It'll receive how much pleasure according to what the body earned while it was together with the Neshama on this world. So that also varies. It's not the same for everybody. That's what he said. The Maila of the Olam HaNeshomos, the stature of the Neshama in the world of Neshomos, Vadai, certainly, Shetimadit, it will be measured. It's not the same for everybody. It will be measured, he says, of Yamaisim Shosu, according to what they accomplished in this world. Shilafiyam Gamagmul Achekach Bizmanoi, upon which, right, the final compensation will also be measured. Will be measured with this. So Mamela now finally says, so this is not, but in the meantime, so the Neshama gets, as we say, sort of a glimpse of what is yet to come. But the true reward, Achashleimus Vemiti Hamausid Lezoichemloi, but the true perfection that is destined for those who merit it, Layesiguloi Haguvloi Neshama, separately the Guf will not have it, the Neshama can't have it, El Bischabrom Shenis Achratchia, until they are joined together a second time, which is after the resurrection, after Tchis HaMeisim. So again, very big case there. The true reward, he says again, will be given to the entire person. The entire person is the Guf together with the Neshama. That'll be the truth. What the Neshama meantime has its pleasure in Hanoi and Gan Eden, that's just a glimpse. Interesting thing. We always think Gan Eden, Gan Eden, Gan Eden. But Gan Eden is only a small measure, a portion of what is yet to come. The true reward is not for the Neshama alone, and certainly the Guf alone. It's for the Neshama and the Guf when they come reunited together after Tchias HaMeisim. That in the new world, that's when the time that the ultimate pleasure and compensation will be given for the Neshama and the body together. Okay, let's take a look at the sheet a little bit, and we'll see a little bit a number of nekudos we're talking about what we have mentioned over here. And we decided, talking about this, Machal is talking about so much about, you know, about the body leaving this world, the neshama and the body separating itself. So just before we get to one hashkafic part, just a little bit of a small halachic interlude, you know, regarding the value of the human body even after it leaves this world, upon death. And one of the shadows that always come up is, and we just have not just a small segment of that, because just we should have a little bit of a feel. And that is, what about, is it permitted, under any circumstances, to actually to cut up a Jewish human body for medical research? In other words, you know, Bizoyin Ames is a very serious avera. A person has a chiyuv, and there's a lot of halachas. We see how careful we are with kavod ames. Anybody who has any idea how chevra kedusha works, when they dress a mess and they do the tahara, and they keep saying be moichel me in case, so every move, you know, they do something that might be so, that may have the appearance, some appearance of somehow of not extending the proper kavod. So they keep asking mechila all the time. Many throughout the whole process, mechila, 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 mechila. Kavod ames is very extremely, extremely, extremely important. But the question is, but there's the tachlis, the tremendous purpose, is a need, right? Medical research. So here we have a number of issues regarding it. Before I should talk about it, so let's take a look. The first item is from a sefer called Genuzei Haparshim, from a person called Rav Dvorkis in Eretz Yisrael. So it's called Nivel Ames L'Shem Limud, to be Menavel Ames, or to mutilate Ames, but the purpose is L'Shem Limud, not Chaz V'Shalom going to be Mavaz Ames, but Nivel Ames L'Shem Limud, because you want to be able to look. How are you able to advance medicine if you're not going to be able, right, to work and to be able to observe a human body? So the best way and the only way, right, really to know what the makeup of a human body is to research it by cutting it up. So how does Halacha view that? So Donal B'Zeh G'dol HaPoskim, says there's no heter to cut him up. The Rebbe's opinion is very interesting. That if I have right now, let's say a choyle lefaneinu, the Rebbe's opinion. Interesting thing, going back that many years, because it seems more like a modern opinion. But here's the opinion, and you'll soon see not everybody agrees with that, and this is the great Nodi Beauty, after we were saying this. You just said that if I have an immediate choyle, let's say who needs a kidney. I have an immediate choyle, need a kidney. And I have a mess, I didn't bury him yet. And clearly, if I can take that kidney, right, and give it to this, can I cut up the mess for that? According to the Beauty, if you have a choyle lefoneinu, then you are allowed to be menateach a mess, in order to save that person. Let's take a look again. Ein lahatir nivel ames v'nituchoi ela b'mokim pikuach nefesh u'lefoneinu, which is even Dorchi Shabbos. Pikuach nefesh Dorchi Shabbos. If it's Dorchi Shabbos, right, then it's Dorchi Kovod Ames also. Pikuach nefesh is the highest order, the highest calling. Tain Zonei Buda. Lachain, therefore, however, said Zonei Buda, but it's not a choyle lefoneinu. Medical research, to be able to advance the medicine, it's not a question if you have a choyle lefoneinu. For medical research, right, to be able to get more knowledge for the future, to say future choylim, for that he doesn't allow it. He only allows it, no, Yehuda allows it, if it's a choylim lefaneinu mamish. So it's negay immediately. Therefore, lachein osa anu ribyudu lenateich es hameisim mishil sharoifim, yiz boinenu veyivduku esibis hamoves, like do autopsies. Because it may help to find out, right, what's the cause of this machle, maybe we're able to prevent future machles. Well, to prevent future machles, he says, mikanu lahabo, right, prevent people, how to heal them, chalolin, boisa machle, mishum dezelo inikra pikuach nefesh kishena choylo lefaneinu. The fact that it may be an acumen for the future, that's not called choylo lefaneinu. and he brings a raya from a Gemara Yuma and so on and so forth. Not allowed to take a Jewish body and to cut it up for the sake of medical research. And he says further, if you give a heter, might be the case could be made. Every time a person dies, let's cut him up, let's learn more and more. Might be because the more we study, the more we know. So he was worried. First, you have the slippery slope also. Keep learning. Yeah, there's no end to learning. Or to find out more and more and more. And so on. Okay. Al Kapon, the Rebbe's opinion is, but if you have a Choyle Lufanenu, then you're allowed to. Come to Yorch Lener. In his Shalos HaShuvah's Binyan Tzion. Shalos HaShuvah's Binyan Tzion, Simen Kufayim Kosaf. The Av B'mokim B'kuach Nefesh Ein L'Navel L'Sameis. See that? In the question of B'kuach Nefesh Ein L'Navel L'Sameis, you have no right to cut up or to mutilate a mace. Na'afile im yesh Choyle Lufanenu, ha'Choyle B'mach L'Zu Shal HaNifter. The doctor says, I have a choyle right here. If I cut up this mace, I happen to die from the same ailment. If I can find to cut up this mace, then I'll be able to heal this choyle right now. And first of all, he says, because you know why? His time is also, it's an interesting thing. He says, are not a bialim on somebody else's body. In other words, it's the nifter himself, right? It's his body, and that we have no right to be menavel his body to save somebody else. He gives an example. It's a very interesting halachic question, and which is difference of opinion also, but this is a Gemara Bava Kama, and it's not a hypothetical. It was a question that David HaMelech himself, the Gemara Bava Kama, asks. He said, to find out this Shaila, he asked it from the Sanhedrin, and the Shaila was as follows. David HaMelech was being attacked. was being attacked by the enemy, and what happened was that the enemy happened to hide, I'll use an example, a cornfield. It wasn't exactly a cornfield, a field that things growing in it. So the enemy was hiding in a cornfield. The Ramelech had a simple, and the cornfield belonged to someone, but the enemy was hiding there. The Ramelech has to Shaila, am I allowed to burn down that cornfield, which means I'm causing a hezek, right? Causing damage to the owner of the cornfield, in order to be able to expose the enemy. It's a question of Pekuach Nefesh, to be able to get rid of the enemy. The Shaila was, am I allowed to save my life the moment Chaveri without Rishus? Interesting, it would seem, what do you mean? Pekuach Nefesh! It's not so poshut to be matzel yourself with momen chaveroi. It's an interesting thing. So he goes on over here and says, and so it's the same thing, to be matzel yourself with Yenim's body, with somebody else's body. With somebody's bezoyin, cutting up a body, somebody else's body, you don't own that body. You don't have jurisdiction on somebody else's body. The chvoy de shalodim choviv olav yosem memamoynoi. Imkeneich nema dimishum pikuach nefesh da'achoyle, because of someone's, let's say, pikuach nefesh on the one hand, yemute levazois ol enavos ameis, dimistome loy mochel ol boyne. The mess is not mochel, it says. Akoponim ledas abinyin tzien, isu denivol ameis, it's sort of like isu gzele. If I cut up a mace, I'm stealing. I'm stealing either some of his organs, or I'm stealing some of his dignity. I'm robbing him of his covet. The also ligs the kvoide shel mace. The odit mememoyne that's more important than one's money. He says nitne pikuach nefesh. So this goes back and forth. We have here the Shas HaShuvah from Ram Shik. Ram Shik was a Talmud of the Chassam Sofer. Take a look. On the Shas HaShuvah from Ram Shik, Chelik Yudeir. He takes like the first opinion. If the shal pikuach nefesh is no iser of cutting up a mace, but that's clear for medical research, that's osir. You see all of them osir. There was already a loud cry against it. Guess who? Rameir Shapiro of Lublin. Lublin Rov. Lublin Rov wrote a safer call. It's not that well. We think of Lublin Rov, right? Building Yeshivas Chacham Lublin. Think of Rameir Shapiro, of course, of being the great speaker. Think about Lublin Rov. We think about him being the founder of Dap Yomi. He wrote Shas HaShuvah's Or HaMeir. And in the Shas HaShuvah's Or HaMeir, he talks about it very strongly and very forcefully against cutting up Jewish bodies for medical research. That's what he points out over here. And also the Chibina Rov, also in Shas HaShuvah's very, very Mishorim. Now, what's interesting is, Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked, Ishaila, about a person, right, who wants to leave his organs right? For medical research or for any other reason. Rav Moshe happens to be those that asked it. Look over here. Bechosef. Bechalas the Chuvah Sigvah Moshe. Chelig Yodeya, Chelig Gimel, Simekuf Mem. Two places. Chelig Yodeya, Chelig Gimel. And also Yodeya, Chelig Dalet, Simenotes. Lezel Shoyne. This is the Lashon of Rav Moshe in the Chuvah. But the Vash Shimish Beivarim Shalames Apitza Ba'osoy. He leaves a will. Right? Person leaves a will. You know, I want my eyes to go here. I want my... So a person has a tzvah, the tzvah refuah. Hinei nimeshiv kalpi din ha-toyre shekobu chazal. Ish mipi ish ad Moshe Rabbeinu all of Hashem. We have a tradition. Shekibla misinai, ein shum adam ba'al. You don't own your body. You ever realize that? A person thinks he owns his body. You don't own your body. You know, you have these situations, you have with the... It's just illegal for a person to sell organs. There's a whole thing about that, selling organs. Forget about it, it's illegal with the government. Yes, no. It's... Apitoire, you're not allowed stamazoi to mutilate, to save... We're not talking about doing business. If it's a question of saving someone, it's even a mitzvah to give a kid, to donate a kidney. You're alive. I'm talking about life. Here we're talking about organs after death. You don't own your body. By the way, even when you're alive, you don't own your body. A person's not allowed to be choyvel to stamazoi. Person is not allowed to wound himself. The tzarek refuah, yes. But people make a mistake thinking that they are bialim, that they own their body. You don't. Because Baruch Hu gave you the body and he gave you halachas how to treat that body. The body is a pikodin. It's a pikodin. And therefore, says Rav Moshe, Ein shum adam bialim al guf. By the way, there's a Radbaz. Radbaz who lived in the 1500s, who was the Rebbe of the Arizal and the Rebbe of Rabbi Saul Ashkenazi, the Baal Shittu Mukubetsis. Ein shum adam bialim al gufoi litzavis. Therefore, you can't write a tzvah what to do with your body. You don't own your body. You don't own your body. Because Baruch Hu gave you the body to use it. It's on loan. You have no right. Litzavis shiyasa begufoi vafila rak de'ever echod me'evorov. Besides that, he says, a mace is osur bahanoa. You're not allowed to benefit from it. The gambaloi is osur bahanoa megufoi vafila ne'ever echod. El mechuyiv lekovroi tekef. You have to bury Bishleimus. So this is just to give you a little bit of an overview of these things. The Shilas come up all the time, but just to give you an idea, you know, these things were written about, as we say, many hundreds of years ago as well regarding it. I want to show you regarding, because time is moving on over here, so maybe we'll move first look at to number three on top. And we see here, we're going to find out a very beautiful vart, which is actually from the Bnei Soscher, who is your site is coming up, Chodesh Tevis, we are in now. Yes. And there's actually a delegation. Actually a delegation, you know, that goes out, of a lot of Yidden that go out to the cave, or to Dinev over there. Right. You notice that Moshe Rabbeinu gives a bracha to Klal Yisrael, Lifnei Moshe, before dying. We talk about dying, so Neshama dying, Neshama goes here. Moshe Rabbeinu gave a bracha, there's also a bracha, Shebeach Moshe, right? Lifnei Moshe. There is a sefer called Mevaser Toiv, but we're only bringing the sefer here because he brings actually the Agra Dekala with a little bit of extra icing on it. Mevaser Toiv happens to be from the Biala Rebbe of Lugano. There's quite a number of Luban Rebbe. The Biala Rebbe of Lugano happens to be a very big Talmud Chochom, who wrote a lot of Sforim and a lot of Shurim on different Mesechtes, as well as a lot of Sforim also in dealing with Droshes and Musar and so on. This is the sefer, this particular Mevaser Toiv is on Yeruch HaYisonim, deals with Yom Neroim. But what we're talking about is not Yom Neroim. And you see the title on top here, Moshe Rabbeinu B'yoyim Petirosoi Higiya L'madrega Hi Gevoya Mikol Chayov. And that's the Esrotzon Ru'uya L'brocha. Which means to say that Moshe Rabbeinu, as great as he was, he reached his peak of godliness is on the day that he died. Let's take a look. If you want to give a bracha to someone, right, there's a number of conditions that the bracha should be effective. Number one, the person to whom you're giving a bracha should be worthy of a bracha. In other words, you need a kli to receive a bracha. Tanai number two, Tanai Hasheni Shestricha Bracha Lovoi Be'es HaRotzei. A bracha to be effective has to come at the time when it's an Es Rotzei Neshamayim. Nire, it appears to me, shall kachom ha-kosov ha-mitzayim, and therefore the posik by Moshe Rabbeinu, the Torah particularly emphasizes the man ha-shpois ha-bracha, lifnei Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu gave a bracha before he died, she'i eis rotzoin godol mesugol moed levorecha, he says to give a bracha. Before a person dies is the most efficacious time to be able to give a bracha. Kash yidua, she'tzadikim b'yoyim p'tirosom, Tzadikim at the day that they're niftim in oilam, misalim l'madreges givoyes v'nalis m'oid. Yoysim mikolim echayim. So it's a very interesting thing. Any tzadik that you know of, any tzaddik you know of. The day that he died, he was the biggest tzaddik more than any day of his life. The day that he dies, he's zoichet to the highest madregas. Any madregas he may have attained throughout his lifetime, but he grows, the peak of his godliness of his tzidkus is on the day that he dies. V'choma, he says, shlo hisigu b'chayeyem asigimos, whatever they were not able to reach while they were alive, they were able to reach, he says, on the day of the Yom HaMisa. Kvar harichu b'zeh, he says, Adoni of Izikeni, my Zedid, was a Friediger, B'yal Rebbe, and a Sefer called Divrei Bina, and so on. Now, so he brings down here the Bnei Sosra. One of the Swan of the Bnei Sosra, we know we feature quite a number of times, is the Agra Dekala. Let's take a look. B'sefer HaKodesh Agra Dekala. Listen, these are the words, now I'm quoting the words of the Bnei Soscher. The Soscher happens to be in Parshas Vayelech. Look what he says. Vayoyim Ha'aleim, Moshe Rabbeinu was saying to them, Ben Meir Ve'esrim Shon Anoichayim, I am today 120 years. Moshe Rabbeinu died at the age of 120. Some say that's why Mevin Shtayi say, so slave you should live to 120. What's 120? Moshe Rabbeinu lived to 120. Okay, fine. Moshe Rabbeinu says, I am today 120. Today, why is he emphasizing today I became 120? Whether it's yesterday or today. What's the idea? Today I became 120. What's the emphasis of today? The Nir Lefarish, go to the third line. The Nir Madregas Moshe. The Madrega of Moshe was so great, as we know. In other words, whatever is humanly possible for a human being to reach, Moshe Rabbeinu reached it. In other words, a human being has limitations. So the height, the peak, what a human being is able to reach in Madregas, Moshe Rabbeinu reached it. No one, right? No one rose like him. Now, Vine Yidua. This lotion, all this lotion of Bnei Soscher. Vine Yidua Dechol HaTzadikim Alosam HaYoyso Gedoyelu Hu Bishas Pitirosam. All Tzadikim, the greatest Mila is at the time of the Pitire. Vim Kei Madregis Moshe Gam Kein Boys HaYoyim Him Madrega HaYoyso Gedoyelu Mekoli Mechayo. So Bnei Soscher says, as great as Moshe Rabbeinu was, he was even greater on the day that he died. Because the day that a tzaddik dies, then he's zoichet to things that he was not able to reach during his lifetime. So Moshe Rabbeinu, with all of his godless, which no one was able to reach Moshe Rabbeinu himself attained even a higher madrega, the highest at shayach, because on the day that he died. That which Moshe Rabbeinu, which he was not capable of reaching throughout his lifetime, the Nekra B'yayim said, that's what that day is called Ishalakim. The day that he died, he was called Ishalakim. We don't find previously, it's called Ishul Akim. Every day he was waiting for the time that he reached the peak in his Kedusha. Hashem Yisbarach Heshiva, Kodesh Baruch Hu says, Ki lo yirani odom achai. As close as you want to come to me, no human being can see HaKodesh Baruch Hu and live. But Vishas Pitirosoi, then you can have, so to speak, a shtickle glimpse of HaKodesh Baruch Hu. V'chei Motzinu, we find L'Boitzina de Kedusha. B'Tzina Kedusha means the holy candle that's referring to the Zohar HaKodesh. You know what Rav Shimon Yochai says? Rav Shimon Yochai says, the Koma, V'yoyim de'lula delay. Rav Shimon Yochai says on the day of his Yortzeit, that he died. You know what he says? Asad no lie, I give testimony. I am made. The Choyoyme Dakim, Shemichoy said, every day that I'm alive, I'm waiting for my last day. You know why I'm waiting for my last day? Because then I'll be able to peak and reach Madregas that I'm not capable of reaching throughout my entire lifetime. So said Shemichoy. Every day my life, Toivne. Toivne means I have desire. Toivne Lemachme to see Yoyme Do. The Chen Shemati, Memagide Yemes, says the Bnei Soschor, that the Baal Shem Tov, Shebaal Shem Tov HaKodesh Omer Bishaz Bitirosoi. You know what Baal Shem Tov said? Baal Shem Tov said at the time of his Petirah, now I know the purpose of my why I was born in this world. In other words, on the day that he died, he reached a certain Madrega, where now he actually realized his whole purpose and why he was created. Something that throughout all his life, maybe he couldn't pinpoint, but any idea that was lacking, that he was not capable of knowing, but on the day of the Petirah, everything was open to him. For Lefize, says the Bnei Soschor, Shomar Kain, Rai Mehemne Be'ez Ginizosos. That's why Rai Mehemne means the loyal shepherd, Moshe Rabbeinu. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu, Bishas Ginizosos, when he's being put away, when Moshe Rabbeinu is dying. Ben Meir Vesim Shonon Oche Hayoim, Rosaloyme. Hayoim Azen Nasisi Ben Meir Vesim Shonon. And as I was waiting for this day, Shekol Yemei Chiyoisi Toivne Lasogis Yom Zevel Yosu Biyodi. I was not able to reach Madregas until this day. Now I became 120. This is the day that I was waiting for. Vimkein, Kol Teshuka, right? Kol HaKuf Chav Shona, everything of the 120 years, everything of my is to be able to come to reach to that day. So the Bialy Rebbe points out, so if the height Madrega of a person is on the day that he dies, so that's the biggest day Shrotzen to be able to give a brocha. That's a Moshe Rabbeinu, when to give a brocha, Lifnei Moisoi. Therefore you find Taki Tzadikim, you find people Taki, Chas V'Sholem, when they're very, very sick, and they know the time is numbered. It's an opportune time where they give brachas to the family, in addition to giving various tzvos and things like that, because that's the time of being able to convey and to have the most korech. That's the highest time of an Eis Ratzon, is the time is of Lifnei Moisoi. So I just want to conclude in another 2 minutes that regarding about Nishomis, regarding about passing on, an interesting thing. And that is, there is a Yid, a Bruja Chosid, named Ramotche Leiner. This Yid Ramotche Leiner, he became a Bluger Chosid from the Friedrich Bluger Rebbe. He says, and the Rebbe started a minyan, going back. So one Friday night, this Ramotche was asked to go to Daven for the Yomit. Bluger Chosid was asked to go to Daven for the Yomit. And as usual, you know, when you go to the Yomit, you know, the Yomit, for the Baltfila, there was a large Chazan Siddur that everybody used at the Yomit. Standard Siddur. Every shul has it. Ashkenaz, Svart, whatever it is. So he had this standard siddur that everybody used. Now this Yid Ramarchai, however, when he goes up to the Yomit, he closed the siddur. He had his own little siddur, you know, that he always daven from. So he felt more comfortable daven his own little siddur. So he closes the big siddur. When the Rebbe saw what Ramarchai did, the Rebbe goes over to him and says, "Why did you close the siddur?" So he says, "Because I want to use my own siddur. Feel more comfortable. This is the siddur I always daven in." The Rebbe said to him, "Listen what the Rebbe said. Said, you know that a person donated this siddur in someone's memory. When you use this siddur," he says, "it's a schus not only for the person who donated it, but it's an aliyah for the neshama, for the person who donated it, for what it's going for. Daven from that siddur. The little things, Rabbi Isai, you have no idea. Davening from a siddur you have in a shul, somebody donated it, li'ilu nishmas, it's not just a schus for the person who donated it, but also for the neshama from which it's going. Here you have to have guidance, we have to understand that some of the things that we know, the little things, you realize how far reaching they are. So only a person like the Bluja Rebbe, right, is so sensitive to think about something like that. So at least we can learn to pick up a little bit, to understand, you know, the cheshivas of Devarim, to be makshiv, every little thing we do, we think they are little things, but in Shemayim, they happen to be very big things. Okay.